That's a Hams beer.
Hams to you. Cheers.
Hams, guys.
Cheers. Doc Phil, good morning.
Cheers, boys.
Yeah.
It's been too long.
Yeah, where have you been, buddy? Oh, you're out at your ranch.
ranch in Montana.
No, I'm still in the lake. I had to come back for the big series.
Oh, yeah.
I figured you'd be in town.
Listen, you are.
What series was that?
Currently listening to the Hockey Guys, the number one ranked college hockey show in the nation.
I love that we got the band back together. Good to have you, Doc.
The boys are back in town. Hey, listen, we got a great show today. Second period coming up at about 9:12. We have Coach Dane Jackson from the victorious, the University of North Dakota hockey team last night over the Golden Gophers. And in the third period, starting at about 9:35, we have the legendary broadcaster, Wally Shaver, going on his 20th year broadcasting Golden Gopher hockey. And we'll reminisce with him about his career and what he sees in the development of college hockey over his career. Well, boys.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Remember, he was the voice of the North Stars, too.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he's legendary. I interrupted him during his broadcast last night, and the guy next to him, I think, was going to punch me. But I told Wally this morning, after 36 years of being a trial lawyer, I learned how to be rude and have the guts to interrupt someone who's a legend like him.
Was that Micheletti next to him?
Pat was sick, so he was unavailable for the game and unavailable for us today. So, Doc Phil,
I think he knew what was coming.
Doc Phil, before we get into the scores last night, let's talk about the big game, the big series, the Ralph Engelstad Arena. It was rocking last night, wasn't it?
Wasn't that fun? I mean, that brings back all the old memories, almost as close as the Winter Sports Center. But, man, it was loud. And, you know, I mean, as the game rolled on, I really thought the Sioux just took it to them. I thought they were – I was talking to my cohorts and my partner. I said, you know, depending on what team's in the better condition in this third period, I think that's going to determine really the outcome. And the boys just came out, and they just took it to them. I just think the Gophers ran out of gas a little bit. I thought North Dakota did a good job, you know, keeping their lines on the ice, not for very long. I thought goaltending was pretty steady. Defensemen are moving the puck well. So, yeah, all in all, I think it was a good game for them. Let's see what they can do again tonight.
You know, I think the viewers have to realize that the Golden Gophers over the last 2 years have lost these players: Brock Faber, Nyes, Cooley, Snuggerud, Rizal. Who are we missing? I mean, they're in a rebuilding mode. They've only got, I think, 3 seniors on this roster that played last night. Veteran defenseman Luke Mittelstad was really, I think he played half the game last night.
And what was the other defenseman? He played for us in Edmonton, Jackson Combs. Or Combs? Combs?
Yes.
He's really, in fact, he's up in the NHL.
Yeah.
Too. So, yeah, I mean, but you know, you know, it's the Golden Gophers, and they always present a challenge. And I think that Bob's, you know, he's got some work cut out for him. Obviously, he's got some young guys that are still trying to figure it out a little bit. I think they had a good welcoming to the NCHC last night. Several good body checks. So we'll see how they respond tonight. That'll be key.
Well, I felt sorry for the Gophers last night for a little bit, maybe like 5 seconds as I was drinking my beer. But there was a couple ticky-tack penalties called against the Gophers that I thought were very, very questionable.
They finally are calling penalties.
Yeah, they like to call penalties, don't they, this year? And, boy, Bob Motzko was giving it to Brandon Schmidt, the head official, last night after the game.
Keep your blade on the ice.
Schmidt had to kick Coach off the ice. I don't know if you saw that, Phil.
No, I did not see that because I left a little bit early. I was with my daughter and the little grandson, so we kind of, when it turned 4-2, they said we got to go home, so we left.
You know, that's a good point about specialty teams, because I remember early in the season as a former coach is, you know, if I had my team already in place, most of the guys back from last year, you can get after it, you know, because specialty teams, 5-on-5, maybe status quo, but specialty teams, I think, are very pivotal all year long, but especially early in the season, because, you know, you need 15 new guys, right? New faces. Who's going to be on those specialty teams, and how successful are they going to be early in the season?
So let's talk Thursday night hockey. Can you imagine having a Wisconsin game and having less than 200 fans in a building? The Big Ten's in trouble.
Yeah, that was
the Big Ten is in trouble.
Yeah, that was a bad look. And then Wisconsin ties Mankato State.
Yeah, 2-2.
Yeah, you know, jeez, the CCHA. I think they're the beneficiary of all the, you know, the NCHC, the Big Ten picking the CHL players up.
When did college hockey move to Thursday for TV rights, and then nobody goes to a Thursday college hockey game? You saw the same thing with Michigan and Robert Morris and probably Notre Dame St. Lawrence. How do you get people in the building on a Thursday night?
Well, you know what the Gophers used to do? As I said last year, it was a free Diet Coke, hot dog, and a back rub to get tickets, you know.
You know, but I think, you know,
you know, that was homecoming weekend down there, so I'm not sure that didn't play a factor, because the football team played Saturday night. So, you know, I mean, you know, there are football fans that cross over to hockey, but yeah, that's a really bad look.
Well, you know,
getting back to the specialty teams, though, you know, I think you're right, Dean. You could see last night they're just a little unsure, you know, to take the shot or not, especially on the power play. I thought they moved the puck pretty good. They can work on that and get better. But I'd like to see those crisp passes and just dial it around the arc and then fire away.
Party at the net.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you, Dean. Listen to this. The Gophers last night going into the game were 12.5% effective on the power play, 40th out of 64 NCAA teams. On the penalty kill, they were allowing their opponents 34% success, 49th out of 64 teams in the NCAA. So, Wils, you nailed it on the head. Specialty teams were important. But I think that goes to a young team. And I think it goes to, okay, where's the leadership? And I think you have to remember two things. Minnesota lost their top five scorers, right? And tonight is Saturday. And if you don't think the Gophers are going to come out on this second game tonight on Saturday and try to get revenge, tonight's game is going to be absolutely fantastic.
Well, you know, I'm going to throw this out.
That first 10 minutes will be important.
For sure, you know. And we talked about this last year. We kicked the dead horse last year, parity, right? How many teams could sweep at home last year? Not very many did. You know what I mean? And there was such a big swing, you know, on the road. Obviously, if you can split on the road, that's a good thing. But you want to sweep at home. And last year, we didn't see that. So that was a question I was going to ask Dane Jackson, Coach Jackson. I go, you know, tonight, I mean, they're coming out 2-3 barrels at you, the Gophers, because they want to grab that game back to do the split on the road.
Don't change anything. Talk about your successes. Don't worry about the failures that you fear. You got to go in the locker room and say, hey, boys, it's Saturday night. You win two at home. So welcome to the hockey guys, and especially to our sponsor. Cheers. Hams to you. This period is brought to you by Hams Beer. Hams is still brewed in that true family tradition, using the purest water and the choicest barley, grain, and hops. And sorry for the voice, Jeff. I sang a little bit too much karaoke in Nashville this week.
Hey, that happens. And we'll be back with head coach Dane Jackson of the University of North Dakota right after this. Well, there was an upset University of Minnesota Gopher fan last night calling in. Coach Jackson, thank you for upsetting those Gopher fans last night.
Absolutely. She sounded a little bit heated.
That sounded like an ex-wife of mine there for a while.
She'll be heated for a while.
What did you guys say to her?
It's what you did to them.
Okay.
Hey, well, I listened to your press conference that you had 2 days ago, and I'll tell you what, Coach, you had it right. You nailed the head right on. It was every game's important. Every game we got to get better. But when we play the Gophers, it's something special. And to educate those and the young players, the 15 new players on your team, the importance regionally of this series with it's just so important that the players step up their game to that intensity, right? And not win, take it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, obviously, you know, talk about it is one thing, but like you say, you know, when the moment comes to really make sure that you're, you know, mentally prepared for the level of intensity you have to have for the battles that are about to come. And obviously the Ralph rocking and having all those fans there definitely helps to get you in the mindset. You can kind of just feel the energy and feel the importance of the matchup.
Coach Wilson here. Congratulations again. But, you know, last year we kicked the dead horse about the parity of how equal teams were. And to sweep, especially at home, it wasn't that easy to do. So I think, as a former coach, I think of specialty teams very pivotal all year long, but very important early in the year. And just that, what do you do differently? Or you just roll out tonight the same thing of the intensity that you played last night?
Yeah, well, I think they're going to be better. We're going to have to be kind of sharper overall. You know, lots of good by our guys, but I think we have to understand that, you know, their level is going to go up, and ours has to go up again as well. Kind of to kind of be ready for it. We can't have any looseness or any satisfaction in our game. You know, it's just got to be a total business like mindset today, where we've got to just kind of flush that one and say, hey, we're ready for another battle that's independent of itself, and just be ready to kind of. You know, battle, compete, be physical, all those things. You know, I was pretty happy with our tenacity to check and finish checks and work. I thought we did a good job of kind of playing a 200-foot game, which kind of limited their rush chances.
Coach, we spend a lot of time talking about the players, getting the players prepped, getting the players ready. I watched a game. The game goes on, power play. It's okay. Puck's moving. The results are bad. On the coaching staff, you got three guys that are there, and you're trying to play each other's role. So after the game, do you go right into it and heated thing and say, how are you going to fix your power play, coach? Or do you go into it and say, hey, it's just one game, and let's go out tomorrow night, and if we get the opportunity, see what happens? How do you approach that on the coaching staff?
Yeah, we definitely look at it all together. You know, it's you know, Dylan Simpson's doing a great job on that. But, yeah, we evaluate everything. We go and look at it together and say, hey, are we creating chances, or what are we doing? What are the things we're doing well? What are the things we got to kind of tweak or improve? So, yeah, we just sit there together, and it's Dylan's power play. But, you know, we're all going to talk about things and say, hey, what adjustments can we make? How can we get a little sharper? You know, things of that nature. So, yeah, we're all working together you know, looking for solutions and just how can we coach the guys up to help them put them in good situations.
The team is sitting in the locker room. Coaching staff's outside the door. Players are dead silent. Fans are going crazy. Phil Collins playing in the background. Crowd screaming. What can you hear that? Can the players hear that crowd noise? I mean, what does it sound like down in the locker room? Try to do your best and explain that.
Yeah, the boys are—they obviously there's nerves, there's excitement. That's why you play the game, right? And the big thing is just kind of getting your mind right. And we talked about getting to the edge, you know, kind of getting to the line. You want to have controlled emotion. You don't want to be going too crazy out there, but you want to be playing extremely hard without, you know, taking dumb penalties or you know, making silly plays. So, yeah, it's just kind of that. You just try to get the guys to that level. You know they're going to be excited. You know they're going to be ready to battle. And it's just kind of that mindset to say, hey, let's go execute. Let's go have fun. Let's enjoy it. But let's kind of make sure that we're toeing the line without going over. But, yeah, the guys know the importance. They feel it, and they're ready to battle. You know, we always talk about, you know, every time you go over the wall, you're getting ready to battle for your teammates. And just every little – you know, every little block you make, every hit you take, every you know, strong play you make for the team, and that's you're kind of building trust with your teammates and coaches, and kind of that's what it's all about.
Well, I laugh as a former coach because you live the rivalry as a player and as a coach. Now you've lived it. You know, my sisters look at me, Wilson, poker face, because you get caught up in it too. You know, you're excited and jacked about this rivalry, so it's to keep the sense of calm. You know, the leader of the ship, right?
Yeah, you're trying to be. You know, I'm an emotional guy too. So you know, you gotta enjoy it. There's moments where you gotta probably try to temper it a little bit. But I think guys feed off your emotion as a staff too. If you're kind of positive and energy filled, obviously we never want to get negative or get focused on the referees. So you know, you can use that emotion to you know, at a good level to kind of show that you're fired up and ready to go too. But just kind of that balance again, even for a staff or a player, it's all the same.
That's all good,
Dr. Phil. Hey, Dr. Yeah. Phil, go ahead.
Talk about, you know, a lot of coaches talk about that first 10 minutes. You know, we want to get a real good start. And Minnesota had a good start. They scored first last night. But your guys came back, you know, and they scored that goal, and then they got the building involved in the game. Talk about how important it is to really get a good start and play your game in that first 10 minutes so that you don't let a team, you know, run you out of the building.
Yeah, and I actually thought we were playing pretty well. We made a bad change there, and they got a kind of a quick strike chance. I'd actually kind of liked our start overall, like territorially and finishing checks and kind of our pace of play I thought was pretty good. Obviously, we made a bad change, and then that's what they do. They make those quick strike plays, and then when they get a chance, they don't miss. So I think even though they had scored, you know, we've kind of talked a lot about that mentality of, you know, just continue to roll next shift, like, no hesitation. It's about a 60-minute kind of battle. So, you know, one small shift, like, let's just try to punch them in the mouth right away, even after we get scored on, and come right back at it. So, yeah, I was really happy with the guys' mentality about, you know, not getting, you know, disappointed or rattled at all by a goal scored. You know, both times when they scored, I thought we continued to play hard and play well and come back. So that's a real positive sign for our group that we just kind of had that mental toughness to just roll and just say, hey, no big deal. That's one small play in the game. And let's just try to tilt the ice with, you know, stacking up shift after shift of kind of doing strong, hard, positive things.
Coach, overall face-offs last night I thought were great for the team, other than, and you're probably going to probably understand where this is, on the power play, the face-off circle was not your best place, and I think that put a lot of strain on the power play. So hopefully tonight the face-offs won, or when you have the man advantage.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we always talk about that. It's kind of a five-man battle. It's not just, you know, center on center. There's a lot of loose pucks that are standing, that are kind of sitting right in the area. Can we get in with our wingers and help out win more of those kind of 50-50 battles on the wing? So it's something that we'll definitely talk about. And like I say, if you can start with the puck and not have to go all the way down and get an entry, that's a big deal. So we'll make sure we're focusing on that task at hand and do a good job of being prepared for that area.
Well, Coach, you know, Dane Jackson from – hey, Doc, Phil, we're running out of time. Coach Dane Jackson from the University of North Dakota hockey team, thank you for joining us this morning on the Hockey Guys.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here with you guys. I appreciate your support, and thanks so much for your coverage of our team.
Hey, go win.
Go win.
Okay, we'll get her done. Thanks, boys.
Well, Doc, what do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I loved it. The one thing I was going to bring up, you know, kudos to Pooley and the strength and conditioning team, and I just wanted to share with him that I think they definitely out-conditioned him in the third period. I mean, there was an extra level of energy there that the Gophers couldn't match in that third period, and so hopefully they can kind of keep that rolling as they move along.
100%. Eddie, take us out of this period before Wally Schaefer, a legendary broadcaster for the Minnesota Gophers, 20 years. And prior to that, with the Minnesota North Stars, will be joining us here at 9:35. Eddie, take us away.
Yeah, this period sponsors Citywide Electric, experience you can trust for design, repair, and installation of any home or business electrical project. That's Citywide Electric. CitywideElectricND.com. So, Jeff, we'll be back, and I think it's interesting as we took and listened to Coach Jackson. There's a lot of coaching that may – do you overcoach now, Wills, between last night and tonight, or do you say, hey, if we start thinking about all of our mistakes, do we put ourselves in a position that we don't want? That's the interesting part about the game of college hockey as a coach, I think.
If it's not broke, don't fix it. Just keep rolling. Just fine-tune a few things he talked about, Coach Jackson, and let her roll tonight.
And, Jeff, when we come back with Wally, it would be remiss if we don't ask him what his memory is going back to what year. When do you think he started in the WSHA game-calling era?
You know, it's going to be a great interview. And we'll be back with the hockey guys, the number one college hockey radio show in the country, right after this. Cool. Welcome back to the hockey guys, the number one college hockey radio show in the country. And we have the pleasure to be joined by the number one college broadcaster for hockey in the nation, Wally Shaver. Good morning. Thank you for joining the hockey guys.
My pleasure to join you guys. But I never knew I had that kind of good stuff going for me.
Well, you know who Ben from International Falls is, right? Ben Gordon, Ben the Gordon. Assistant coach. Yeah, of the Minnesota Gophers. We had to throw that out for you.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, this is Wilson here. I'm a Fort Francis boy. I don't like International Falls. That was the biggest rival in college hockey in the United States and Canada.
For second-tier college players that didn't get through high school.
Well, growing up, we had some very good friends in Fort Francis, so I'm well aware of the rivalry between the two towns.
Yeah, I was pretty fortunate when my age group was the Allison brothers and the Beck brothers, so I had some good guys that could carry us a lot of victories.
You sure did, yeah.
Well, Wally, Eddie Christian here. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing really good, Eddie.
I'd be Billy's son, so I'll just put you in that bucket. So I asked Jeff earlier, I said, you talked to Wally last night. Did you ask him what year he started in the WCHA? And Jeff said, I'm not that old. Wally, when was your first college hockey game? Which year did you call your first game?
Well, our first broadcast that we did, I was working with Frank Mazzocco. We were doing the Minnesota North Stars on Channel 29 in the Twin Cities. That was back in the mid-80s, and it was Doug Woog's first year as a head coach at Minnesota. And the station manager for KITN at the time, Dale Palachuk, came up to me and he says, hey, we just had a call with the University of Minnesota and they're interested in putting our playoff games on TV. And I said, Dale, you wouldn't believe the following the University of Minnesota hockey has and the rich history here and the number of players that have just done phenomenal things on all levels of hockey. And I said, if you've got a chance to pick up those games, I know Frank and I would be glad to do those games. So we got into the playoff format. I think the very first series we did was a WCHA playoff out in Denver, and went on. And for the next 7 years, Frank Mazzocco and I did the University of Minnesota Gophers. So it started with the 85 playoffs, and I worked on the crew up until the 91-92 season. So it was a lot of fun.
Boy, there's some top players around the WCHA back in that day. Looking back at your career, who do you look at as one of the top players that you have watched broadcasting a game?
Oh, boy. There's,
and that's
there's
a tough
so many.
One, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, you can't overlook what Tony Herkus did here at North Dakota. I mean, he put up
Thunder Bay
116 points when he got his Hobie Baker Award that year, and it's still the all-time record in college hockey for single-season scoring, as far as I know. I think that's
it
still
is.
True, but
yep.
He was just, I mean, when they called it the Herkus Circus, it was. When he stepped on the ice for each shift, you just didn't know what was going to happen, and inevitably, you know, when you're averaging 3-4 points a game, something positive was going to happen for North Dakota, and it usually did.
Well, I can tell you, it was back in about 1983. It was summer hockey at the UND hockey camp, and it was the 9 o'clock pros versus the college players. And walking in the locker room was Neil Broughton, Aaron Broughton, Butsy Erickson. And the Broughton brothers sat next or on each side of me, and as we were tightening our skates, their forearms were bigger than my calves. And and they had Dave Christian on their team and Chorney. And, yeah, and we had Herkus and we had Joyce and a goalie by the name of Eddie Belfour who came down from Winkler to play. And
yeah, boy, he wasn't too bad.
No, he wasn't too bad either. But the Broughton boys and Butsy were prior to that. And then you take a look at Pat Micheletti, your broadcast partner.
Yeah.
A legend himself.
The little
Nick. Yeah, he was a heck of a player, too.
Yeah, he certainly was. And it's just, it's been a treat to watch all these guys come through the program. And especially when you play other teams, too, and you see the vast array of talent and skills that these guys have, and especially nowadays. I mean, the skill level that these kids possess is just incredible.
You know, the one thing, and I'll say Tim Hennessy from North Dakota Hockey, who's been there forever along with you, you two have the unique ability that I can put my radio on, turn my lights off, close my eyes, and I can visually see the game as you are verbally describing it. How do you develop that skill, or is it just innate?
Well, I go back to my dad, Al Shaver, who did the North Stars radio broadcast for all 26 years that the team was there. We moved down from Canada back when the NHL expanded from 6 to 12 teams, and he got the broadcast job with WCCO Radio in the cities to be the broadcaster, and he did every game for them all 26 years. And I was like you. You know, I was a high school kid just starting grade 10 in Minnetonka, and you turn on your transistor radio, and if we're out in the West Coast, you know, Mom wouldn't let us stay up and watch it, so we'd sneak the radio into the bedroom and listen to him. So it was the same type of thing. You'd kind of close your eyes, and the way he described the game, and I've tried to pattern that style of broadcasting after my dad, and there was always one thing he told me, and I use this a lot to this day. He says, pretend you're talking to somebody who's blind because they can't see the game, but they can understand the rink and how it's set up. And I remember when I was in college at Southwest State down in Marshall, Minnesota, there was a blind guy that I knew quite well. And every now and then I think of the guy, and I try to imagine describing a hockey game to him. And I've followed that pattern, and I guess so far it's worked. I've been doing it for a while.
And you're fantastic. And I'll tell you, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on our show. And I apologize for rudely interrupting you during your broadcast last night, but I had to visit with you. You know,
I have a question.
Yeah, Doc Phil Johnson, go ahead.
Wally, I am just so impressed by the announcers just in general. And I've always wanted to know, you know, I know Tim Hennessy very well, and I'm always amazed how you guys can make that flow of the game without missing a beat. You know the numbers, you know the players. Is that an innate ability, or is that a learned skill that you have memorized that whole roster so that you can just talk about those players as they're moving back and forth on the ice? I couldn't do that. I mean, I'm always amazed by the ability for you guys to make that happen.
Well, that's a good point, but I think like a lot of broadcasters, regardless of the sport, you do your homework. I put in 5 or 6 hours worth of homework before the weekend series starts, and it's just putting notes together on all the players. And, you know, I have my basic bio on all the Gopher players, and then I check the bios on all the visiting players too. So I just put my sheets together, and then whatever kind of current stats or streaks that they might be on. And I try to remember a lot of those, but I always have my notes right in my hand so I can make a quick reference to it. But it's Frank and I were talking about it one day a while back, a few years ago, and it's just I don't know if it's a plus or a minus, but I think you get the ability to think fast because you're elevated looking at it, but you can kind of see where a breakout's going. You can kind of see, you know, if a 3-on-2 is starting to unfold and who might be back and who's heading up the ice with the puck. And so you can kind of look forward to what might be happening down the road. It's kind of like what Gretzky always said, you know, don't go to where the puck is, go to where it's going. So you kind of get that mentality. So you think the game fast, and not that I'm smarter than anybody, because that's certainly not the case. Just ask my wife. But you kind of learn that, and it's just the way you go. And the memorization, I don't really spend a whole lot of time trying to memorize, but you do. And usually the second game of a weekend series is easier because you've identified a lot of the players on the other team and know their numbers a lot of times too, you learn their style of play and how they skate, you know, how they handle the puck, and those little things click, and you just remember those things.
One of the things we talked about early in our show when it started this morning was people got to remember, and getting specifically to the Gopher team, this is a young team. They lost five of their top scorers last year. They, you know, you look back. You have Knives. You have Faber. You have Cooley. You got Snuggerud, Renzel, and Doc Phil. I'm missing one there that you brought out.
Probably
Jack Lacombe. Yeah. Okay. And these Lacombe, are. Yeah. I mean, it's a total. Yeah, Jackson Lacombe. It's a total rebuild for this Gopher team. You know, the one mainstay is Luke Mittelstadt, who has just been playing phenomenal. I think he played about half the game last night. The question is Bob Mosko going to get the time to rebuild this team? Is the fan base going to be patient? North Dakota, they had a rebuilding last couple years, and look what happened to Coach Barry.
Yeah, and even the rebuild this year, I mean, they've got 15 new guys. They've got more new players in that squad than the Gophers do. So, it's a process, and sometimes you don't expect to lose all the guys you do. I mean, we graduated five guys last year and another six turned pro, so it's a heavy loss, especially when they're your key players. And then suddenly, you know, the guys like a Luke Mittelstadt and a Leo Gruba and a Cal Thomas, they've got to get elevated roles and more minutes. And even your guys that were maybe your 6, 7, and 8 defense, now all of a sudden they're your 4, 5, and 6, and they've got to play a lot. So you just fill in the gaps, and you just got to give it a little bit of time as they mature and grow and reduce the errors.
Well, legendary broadcaster Wally Shaver, we greatly appreciate you joining the Hockey Guys this morning. And I apologize for interrupting you last night. Eddie, we need to thank some people.
Yeah, Wally, thank you. This period intermission is sponsored by Gateway Chevrolet, where you can save big on a Chevy Silverado, Equinox, or Blazer. Go online at FargoChevrolet.com, and we'll be back to talk college hockey. Welcome back to the Hockey Guys. We also give a shout-out to the Fargo Force, who are a Wiggler Weekly sponsor, Dakota Refrigeration, and Carpet World. Thank you for being here with the Hockey Guys. And a little shout-out to Coach Brad Holinka from Falda, Minnesota. He was at his first college game, I understand, maybe last night. So, Coach Holinka from Falda, Minnesota, thanks for listening in here to the Hockey Guys.
I got to do a few shout-outs, too, out there. First of all, Dan Hammer, it's your birthday, you're all fart. You look good for 82 years old.
Yeah,
you look,
he's in good shape.
You're kicking it. You know, on a serious note, Gretchen Noah coming home from Rochester, thoughts and prayers with her and her family and praying for you all the time. Big hockey family. So, Gretchen, we pray for you strong.
We're praying for you.
And then my last one is Chet. He's out of the lake, Battle Lake, listening to us today. Big hockey fan. And get your leaves raked. Okay, get it done. Quit complaining about it. Do your job.
Say, Doc Phil, E.J. Emery, yeah, last year when he played, I thought he was a player that, frankly, did not belong on the ice. But yeah, his development from last year to this year, and he scored 2 goals last night, okay? He's a completely different player, physically, mentally. How does that happen?
Well, we talk about that. I mean, he came in as an 18-year-old, remember, you know, from the National Team Development Program. And so they're still growing. They're still developing. And now he's turning into a man, you know. And so I think a lot of that physical development does enhance his skills. But you're exactly right. I watched him a lot last night. He's a different player. Definitely a different player, and he has definitely stepped up his game, and I hope he continues to elevate that game a little bit even further. But he's a good kid, and I think he's got a bright future here as long as he can continue to get stronger and develop his skills.
First round draft pick of the New York Rangers. I think they're pretty happy now compared to last year, Coach Wills.
Yes.
And I got to throw this out, Dr. Phil, is Compton, California. Thank you, Wayne Gretzky, for bringing it on the map down at L.A. way in the day, you know. But I looked at his bio a little bit. I go, Compton, California.
Get the kids to the rink, and they stay out of trouble. The game's pretty simple. Yeah. So build more rinks, I tell Poopy. We don't need city parks. They have to have police in city parks. We don't have policemen in hockey rinks. So build more rinks. The game gets good. Players get better. They come from everywhere. Stat I think I heard this week, this may be shocking. College hockey used to be 60% Americans. They opened up the border, and college hockey had a 40% decrease. You now have 40% U.S. kids playing college hockey. And guess what happened to the junior leagues in Canada that was trying to exclude the Americans from coming out? The kids that aren't playing here, they've seen the same 40 percentage point difference in Americans playing in the major junior hockey leagues in Canada. So the game of hockey is becoming one country, and we don't want to get into politics, right, Wills?
Well, no, I'm going to talk, and I neglected to bring this up with Bliss Littler, general manager of the Wenatchee Wild, when we had him on last week. Listen, we got two players from Moorhead that are playing for the Wenatchee Wild right now. And that, Eddie, is a prime example of, with the CHL opening up their teams to U.S. players, you're going to get players from our region going into the Western Hockey League. Frankly,
college hockey is going to get older, and you're going to watch those kids in their last year that may not have a place to play go just to save their careers. They're going to go north.
And when I was talking to Bliss last night after the game, he said, "Don't forget, for every year those two Moorhead players play for Wenatchee, they get $10,000 each in a scholarship, which the USHL doesn't do, but they're going to have to. USA Hockey is going to have to address that issue." Wills.
Dr. Phil, I'm going to throw this out at you. Games that caught your eye last night. I was thinking about the Saratori brothers. They might be still on the phone talking with each other because they had a lot of goals against. But games last night that caught your eye.
Lindenwood beat Denver.
Yeah.
Yes.
Augustana wins.
Beats Arizona.
That's not good for the NCHC. I watched that one.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, those are the ones that kind of caught my eye right off the bat. And then Wisconsin and Mankato tying at 2-2.
After tying Thursday night.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So,
and Michigan State knocking off BU, the number one team in the country last night.
That was on at the same time that I was watching the North Dakota-Minnesota game. Michigan State, BU, so obviously BU was one. Michigan State was, I think, four. Obviously, we might see some change in rankings.
You know, another one I got to hit up is the women's side. You know, I think of Johnson at Wisconsin. He's hammering people. He beat Vermont yesterday 8-1, you know. What does he want, 8 national titles?
Dynasty.
A dynasty. I mean, if I got daughters, that's where I want them to go play hockey, right? A guy that gets things done, and they're like just a primo power. So I got to give a shout-out to women's hockey.
I'm going to throw this one again, Canisius over Colgate. When you look at East Coast hockey, when you look at Atlantic playing one of the bigs, Colgate, 0-2. That's not how they're used to starting the season, and they don't play as many games as the rest of the world, so maybe trouble at Colgate, Jeff, your buddy.
Yeah, I look at the CCHA this year, Doc. I think they're going to be the upset league. You take a look at Augustana. I think they're for real when they knocked off Arizona last night. You take a look at St. Thomas, who will be in the NCHC next year. You take a look at Mankato, Minnesota State. You take a look at Bemidji. I mean, the CCHA is going to be the upset league. Western Michigan last night beat Northern Michigan, so 2-1. I mean, so that league, I think, is the beneficiary of the players from the CCHA or CHL coming into the Big Ten, the NCHC, where those players that would normally play are going to the CCHA, and they're damn good players.
And I've been watching too much with my grandkids because the Catamounts, there's a mascot for you if you're in the mascot game, beat the Huskies. Think about what that does again for the NCHC, because we need the NCHC to go out when you're playing interleague games, and you need to be on the top of the scoreboard. You can't be on the bottom of that scoreboard.
And Duluth pounded Bemidji last night in Bemidji, 7-3.
And I was just going to bring that score up. You know, Stanley, it's been a little quiet with Duluth, but he's winning.
Well, he had last year one of the youngest teams in NCAA last year, Minnesota Duluth. Those youngsters are now sophomores, right? Got the growing pains, but now you're getting the benefit of having those younger players develop, just like North Dakota has with E.J. Emery. Doc, Phil, you mentioned that Duluth is going to be a team, and they're going to be for real this year.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. It'll be a great series coming up.
And I'm a big Sandlin fan. He's smart. He's been around. He knows what to do.
Yes. He's very experienced, and he's just an all-around good guy.
I agree.
He's one of the deans of college hockey at this point.
Absolutely.
So Union, North Dakota, and Michigan. Michigan's the only team that's 6 wins, so they played a lot of games. And the rest of them are sitting there trying to figure out how to keep out.